It was just a couple of days away from Purim, and wanted to devote this second session to Inyoni Purim, and to begin with a Dvar Halacha, by investigating what is without a doubt one of the more curious halachas in the entirety of the Shulchan Aruch, one could safely say. Before we get to what the Gemara has to say, of course, our first port of call is Megillas Esther itself, because there will be no moving away from the fact that the days of Purim are described by the Pasuk as Yemei Mishte V'Simcha. And if we translate those words literally, Yemei is benign, and so is Simcha, and in the middle is the word Mishte, and it means drinking, or at the very least, a feast that is centered around drinking. Those are the words of the Megillas Esther, even before anybody else has said a word. And from there, we move to the very well-known statement of Rava in the Talmud in Maseches Megillah, Daf Zayin Amud Beis. And he says, Amar Rava, Michayev Inish Libesume Bepuria. A person has an obligation, Libesume, Rashi translates, to drink to become inebriated on Purim, Adlo Yoda Bein Oro Haman Lebaruch Mordechai. Until he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Now actually, as well known as these words are, there are probably four questions that need to be raised with regards to the understanding of this matter. Firstly, which is the simplest question, why? Why does one have to drink so much? What's the tam hadavar? I must confess, with my Irish roots, of all the questions, this is the one that tends to bother me less, but it is a valid question. Madua. Secondly, and curiously that it's a question, is this the halacha? Now, the reason why it's that doesn't sound like it should be a question is because no one officially opposes Rava. There is no counter voice in the Talmud which says no one doesn't have to do that. But still, as we will see, there is room to investigate whether or not the halacha is in accordance with Rava in this regard. The third question is, are there any parameters, are there any specifics or guidelines or details that we need to know? It's rather open-ended. Levesume Bepuria seems unqualified, unchecked. Are there any borders that one needs to be aware of in terms of how to fulfill this mitzvah? And finally, what exactly is the meaning of the words not knowing between Or Haman and Baruch Mordechai? They don't seem to be things that one would intuitively distinguish between, and then reach a point that they didn't distinguish between. And of course, if we fail to clarify from the outset what is the meaning of the difference between Or Haman and Baruch Mordechai, so we may actually begin the day already in the zone that we're meant to have reached through Besumi Bepuria, and we merely reached it via ignorance. So that is a question that also needs to be investigated. So to begin at the beginning, Betam Hadavar. Now there is more than one reason given, but the classic reason is to be found in the Avudram. The Rabbeinu David Avudaram, a Talmud, a contemporary of the Tur. And he says very simply, the miracles, the key events of the story of Purim revolved around Mishte Yayin. The Megillah begins with the Mishte, and it is at that Mishte that Vashti is deposed. Furthermore, the downfall of Haman revolves around Mishteh, and therefore there is a certain aspect of Zecher L'Neis, because all of the key events happen through Mishteh Yayin, so therefore there is a mitzvah of Mishteh Yayin in excess of the mitzvah of Asamachta Bechagecha that we have on Yom Tov, in excess of that, to make a point of marking the Mishteh Yayin. As surely as on Chanukah the miracle happened through the agency of oil, and therefore oil is the medium which we used to be mefarsem through lighting it, so too wine is the medium through which the miracle of Purim happened, and we fulfill through imbibing. It is true, some of the substances that people drink on Purim could arguably be set on fire, but the easier way is the way the halacha does it. And that's the background to the mitzvah according to the Avodah. Now, we should note that the three Amudei Harah, that is to say, the three primary Rishonim that the Shulchan Aruch will base his decisions on, namely the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam, all codify the statement of Rava. The Rif and the Rosh quote him verbatim, Kichsavo v'chilshono, Chayev inish lebesume bepuria adlo yada. Curiously, the Rif and the Rosh, they switch round adlo yara adlo yada bein Baruch Mordechai la'ar Haman, as opposed to what we have been Ar Haman la'Baruch Mordechai. I'm not sure there's a material difference there, but it should be noted. The Rambam is not really his derech to quote, certainly in Aramaic, the words of the Gemara verbatim. He will codify it in Hebrew, which he does. But more or less, and we'll get to the words of the Rambam in due time, mitzvah Hashem, but there is no doubt that he is giving you Rava's statement in his own words. And of course, once again, no surprises. Rava said it. No one dissented. An unopposed statement in the Talmud, and therefore it's codified by these classic Rishonim. So where do the complications begin? They begin very soon after the Rif. Rabbeinu Yitzhak Alfasi in the 1200s had a Talmud called Rabbeinu Ephraim, and he is one need say no more that he is a Talmud of the Rif. He's a heavyweight halachic personality. And Rabbeinu Ephraim is of the opinion that in this matter, the halacha does not follow Rava. He said it, and we don't paskin that way. Now the question is, well, on what basis would Rabbeinu Ephraim say that? The answer, says Rabbeinu Ephraim, is immediately following Rava's words. Rava said, Chai v'nish lebiv sumi bepuria, etc., etc. And then the Gemara brings a story. It's a well-known story. And here it is. Rabba v'Rabbi Zeira. So these two great sages of the Talmud, Rabba and Rabbi Zeira, Abdu Su'udas Purim b'Hadei Hadadi. So they had Purim Suda together. Ifsum. And, as of course the halacha demands, they became inebriated. Kam Rabba Shachtel Rabbi Zeira. So Rabba got up and slaughtered Rabbi Zeira. I'm translating the words literally for the sake of simplicity. And that was that. Well, Lemachar, the next day, Bo irachame va'achaye. He prayed for him and brought him back to life again. If you know how, that's an antidote. Lashana, following year, Amar Lei, so Rabba said to Rabbi Zeira, no, we'll be getting together. Ne Seymar, v'navid Sudas Purim. Would you like to come and have Sudas Purim with me? Bahadi Adadi, let's have Sudas Purim together. Amar Lei, so Rabbi Zeira said, well, we can already guess in our vernacular, don't call us, we'll call you. The Gemara says, Lo b'chol shata v'shata misrachish nisa. Miracles don't happen the whole time. They don't happen every year, and therefore I'm only alive due to a miracle this time round. I'd rather quit while I'm ahead, and therefore I'm actually busy. But thank you. So, We should know, by the way, it's important, and certainly as a developed discussion, just to raise the issue. The son of the Rambam, Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam, has an exposition on Agodos, Ma'amar al Agodos, and it's quoted actually in its entirety. It's printed at the beginning of the Ein Yaakov. Of course, Ein Yaakov is a collection of all of the Agodos of Shas. And Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam says many things that one needs to know in terms of approaching Agoda. And one of them is with regards to extreme, shall we say, statements in the Talmud. And it happens sometimes that the Gemara, in order to ensure that you get the point, will talk about things in a very extreme way. As surely as there is the use of allegory to bring across a point, so too is there the use of sometimes of hyperbole. And in principle, I think everyone subscribes to this, but he gives a couple of examples. And one of the examples is our Gemara. He says, for example, Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam categorically refuses to believe that Rabbah actually killed Rabbi Zeira. Meaning, even with Libesumi Bepuria, as they say in poetic modern Hebrew, Yesh Gevul. And it's clear to him that he didn't kill him. When it says he killed him, presumably that's the Gemara's way of saying he dealt him a heavy blow to the head and knocked him unconscious or something like that. And when he davened for him to bring him back to life, that means that he prayed for his complete recovery. And therefore, what is discussed in the Talmud as a matter of life and death is really a question of some type of episode that got out of hand that was subsequently remedied. One thing is for sure, it was enough to keep Rabbi Zeira away for the next year. That's al derech hapshat. Now, Rabbeinu Ephraim says, ask a simple question. Why are we being told this? What is the moral of the story here? The moral of the story is, here is a case where the maxim of chayiv inish levesume led to no good, led to a negative consequence, and the reason why the Talmud brings it immediately after Rava is, as they would say, ma'aseh listor. It is an episode with the intent of retracting or undoing what would otherwise have been accepted as the halacha. As if to say, if we would describe it in one flow, somebody said it in the Gemara, but then the Gemara immediately proceeds to give you this episode whereby you see no good came of it, and the moral of the story is better left alone. That is the position of Rabbeinu Ephraim, and therefore he says, we don't paskin like Rava. Interesting. That's for many of us, if you've never heard it, that's upsetting on religious grounds. We should know, by the way, and this the Bach points out, that even those who subscribe to Rabbeinu Ephraim, that we don't paskin like Rava, that is not to say that there is no mitzvah of Mishteh on Yom Tov, on Purim. That's why we made a point of beginning, not with Rava's statement, but with Megillas Esther, which describes the days of Purim as Yimei Mishteh V'Simcha. There's no getting around that, and nothing harmful needs to come of that. And that's important because, says the Bach, even if we subscribe to Rabbeinu Ephraim that we don't paskin like Rava, so that means that we don't rule that a person needs to drink until Adlo Yada. Okay, not that far, but not at all. Nobody would say that. The Megillas Esther says Yimei Mishteh V'Simcha, the person should drink liberally, but just not that much. So that's even the negative. That's the nays. Is still Yimei Mishteh V'Simcha. But what's fascinating is, there are two Gedolei Hadoros, one from the Rishonim and one from the Gedolei Acharonim, who both have the same response to Rabbeinu Ephraim. They are the Sefer HaEshkol of the Rishonim and the Pri Chodosh from the Acharonim. They both say exactly the same thing. Namely, they look at all of the evidence presented by Rabbeinu Ephraim and draw the opposite conclusion, as if to say, the story that is brought of Rabbah and Rabbi Zeira and everything that happened is not there to demonstrate that the halacha is not like Rava. It is anything, it is a demonstration that the halacha is like Rava. How so? For a very simple reason. If, say, the Sefer Eshkol and the Pri Chadosh, if the intent of the story is, as a result of seeing what terrible things happened that year, that this halacha was abolished or undermined, if that's true, then why would Rabbi Zeirev refuse to have a Suda again with Rabbah? In other words, now that everybody knows that no one is looking to get inebriated to that level anymore, so he's not in danger. But actually, we see from Rabbi Zeira, he felt that he would be in exactly the same danger this time, this year, as he was last year, because the halacha hasn't changed. So the moral of the story is not that there is no din of Chai Vinish Libesumi Bepuria. The moral of the story is Rabbi Zeira should be having his Purim Suda safely distant from Rabbah. But the Chai Vinish Libesumi didn't go away, because if it went away, then they should have had the Purim Suda together. They were best of friends. So that's very interesting. The very same story and the opposite conclusion. What's more, and this is interesting sometimes to know the chronology, as if we meet names in the Talmud, and if they all blend together, we lose out sometimes because to know who came before, who came after who. And very briefly, the original halacha was propounded by Rava. Omar Rava. Chai Vinish Libesumi Bepuria. The story of the knockout Purim Suda was between Rabbah and Rabbi Zeira. They were the generation before Rava. And therefore, as the Chasam Sofer points out in the Tshuvas, Arachayim, Simin Kuf Pei Hei, it is clear that the point of the Gemara is not to say, you see from the story, that teaches you that Rava's ruling was repealed. Rava's ruling was propounded and formulated as such after that Suda took place. He's a generation after Rabbi and Rabbi Zeira. And whatever happened there didn't stop him from saying Chayev Inish Libesumi Bepuria. So the moral of the story, again, is not that there is no din of Libesumi Bepuria. The moral of the story is be careful and choose your guests and your hosts carefully as well. Now, the question is, it's a befuddling question. What is the meaning of Adelo Yoda? Adelo Yoda, Ben Ora Haman, Lebaruch Mordechai. And as I say, I think most of us go in with a head start because we don't know the difference in the first place. It's a very obscure meter for the end point of this mitzvah. And we should know there are a number of approaches among the Rishonim, and each of them are very specific. Each of them provides a different context. For example, commenting on the words "Dilo Yada bin Araham and Labaruch Mordechai," the Tosfos quote a Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi continues: "Arura Zeresh, Barucha Esther, Arurim Kol Harishoyim, Baruchim Kol HaYehudim," or "Ar Nusach is Baruchim Kol HaTzadikim." That's Tosfos's comment at that point. And of course, why is that a comment on Rava? So Meforshim point out that this is Tosfos' way of explaining what Adelo Yada means. In other words, there are actually six phrases when you put them all together. Tosfos is giving you to understand that Araham and Baruch Mordechai is just the beginning of a longer sentence which continues Arurazere, Shiburcha Esther, Arum Kol Risharim, Baruchim Kol Tzadikim. And the point is, if you have those six parts, when a person reaches a point that they cannot make their way through all of those in order, that's called Adelo Yada. Okay, that's Tosfos. So that means Tosfos took this half a sentence, turned it into a paragraph, and then that makes it more. But again, it's very specific. The Ramah, in his Perush Darkei Moshe on the Tor, quotes three additional explanations from those that came before him. The first, from Rabbeinu Yerucham, who was a Talmud of the Rosh, is that Adelo Yada bin Araham and Lebaruch Mordechai is a reference to the fact that the gematria of Araham and Baruch Mordechai is identical. Meaning they both have a gematria, well, I should hesitate to give it away, but they both have a gematria of 502. And the meaning of Adelo Yada is, if a person doesn't know, to calculate that cheshbon. whereby he starts to put together Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai, and it equals the same thing. Once again, it's very specific. There are certain people that they're very good with numbers, which means they would actually have to do a lot of damage, I would say, until they reach a point where they can't. Some people, it's a knack. They just see a word, then they see the gematria. Other people have trouble with numbers, especially nowadays. Everyone has trouble with numbers. No one adds anything together anymore because you have a machine to do it for you. I'm told that there's or not be surprised if a website entitled 2plus2.com is on the way, just for those difficult situations where you have to do a simple arithmetic. So to start to put together gematrias, no one knows anyone's phone number anymore, no one knows their own number anymore, and therefore this mitzvah just got harder, because even before you started, we already are handicapped by technology. So that is Rabbeinu Yerucham. It's about the gematrias. I'm not sure exactly how the terminology of until he doesn't know Adelo Yada Bain Aruch Haman LeBaruch Mordechai to distinguish between them, because the gematrias are actually equating them. So what exactly is the point of what is the reference to distinguishing between them? That I don't know. And we proceed. Probably the best known Perush, because it's codified by the Ramah, is from the Maharil, or Rabbeinu Yaakov Molin, one of the great Ashkenazi Rishonim. And it's very, I would say, low-key. It's very moderate. And that is, says the Maharil, drink a little bit more than usual. It will make you a little bit dozy. Have a nap. And of course, when you're asleep, so then you don't know the difference between Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Now, once again, it happens to be that, at least consciously, when you're asleep, you don't know the difference between anything. So it's a very specific thing not to know. It's chosen out of thousands of things that you don't know consciously when you are asleep. But that's the Maharil. A little bit more than usual, never a bit of a nap. Not too much, against the bench, after all, but to doze off a little bit. And the final Perush, quoted by the Ramah, is from a sefer he calls Sefer HaMinhagim, is actually a reference to a poem that they had, and I believe in the Machzor Vitri it is still to be found. It's a long piyut, and it has alternating verses, and one verse ends with Baruch Mordechai, and one verse ends with Aruch Haman. And the point is to reach a point where you no longer remember, am I meant to say Aruch Haman, am I meant to say Baruch Mordechai, but you really have to get hold of that song in order to get mixed up about it. And it's not actually widely in circulation, and that's, again, a very, very specific context. Okay, so this is what we have from the Rishonim. I would like to make special mention of a Perush, Adelo Yoda, bin Aruch Haman LeBaruch Mordechai, which is to be found in the Taz. The Taz, Rabbeinu David Halevi, and his Perush Turei Zahav on the Shulchan Aruch. And I believe, without meaning to say anything about what we've said before, but perhaps it brings it closer to an experience that we can draw from. And these are his words. The Taz, Rabbeinu David Halevi. It seems to me, the meaning is, D'tzarech ha'adam, lasei shevach l'Hashem yisparach. A person needs to praise Hashem in the Purim Suda, al tova kefula she'asa imanu, for a double kindness that he bestowed upon us. And really, the point that's going to come out from the Taz is, I think that for us, if we think about it perhaps slightly superficially, Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai are two sides of the coin. They're essentially two ways of saying the same thing. One defines the other. And that's not true. Actually, the reference is to what we were speaking about last week in our investigations into Megillas Esther Perikres, because the two are not the same at all. One is built on the other. Meaning, Ha'achas, the first kindness is Per onus shehevia shem yisparach al haman. the disaster that befell Haman, because with the fall of Haman fell the Gezerah against the Jewish people. Ve'ilu lo nisbarech Mordechai. Imagine life, says the Taz. Imagine the story of Esther, that Mordechai had not been promoted in Haman's stead. What would he have done? He would have carried on being Mordechai he was before. Elohaya nitzol and kol Yisrael. He would have been part of the Jewish people. Dayenu. If we may already begin to quote the phrase. That's enough. The Jewish people are no more or less saved from their imminent destruction, whether Mordechai has taken Haman's job. Elosha berchon Mordechai begedula ma'od, but there was almost a tosefes, a further gratuitous kindness on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's part. Vatova Yisera. And that's very interesting. Because now Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai are not two ways of saying the same thing. One of them was critical, Aruch Haman, to deal with the threat. And the other was the icing on the cake. Mordechai becoming Mishnah Lemela. Al-Kain Amar. Therefore, the Gemara says, Shetzarech Levesume, a person should become intoxicated and become more and more liberated. Ad shelo yada ma'alaseinu, until he can no longer distinguish between the kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that was crucial for us and the kindness that was the added extra. Bein Aro Haman, which is shezem ha'pala shelo, lebaruch Mordechai, shezem ma'alaseinu sheniya. And the moral of the story is, uvazeh niskavnu, shelo yafsik militin shevech hazeh besimcha, a person should be praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the course of the Suda until the distinction between the necessities and the luxuries are blurred and it all becomes one thing, and that is a symphonic and harmonized Shevach of the whole Purim story. And then, says the Taz, he's done his job. So that is a very beautiful explanation of Adlo Yoda, and gives also, I believe, an orientation to the Su'uda, which is important. In other words, it is a mood that is accompanying to the point of Araham. Now, interestingly, having seen so far only early sources, that is to say the Talmud and the Rishonim, how does this look in the Shulchan Aruch? Well, in Siman Tafresh Tzadik Hei, Si'if Beis, Acharei Hadvarim Ha'ele, after everything we've seen, we meet the Shulchan Aruch, and he says as follows: Chayev Inish Libesumi Bepuria Adula Yoda Bein Aruch Haman LeBaruch Mordechai. So it's very interesting, because there is no doubt that he has codified the halacha, but actually he has quoted it verbatim, which is interesting because so much discussion happened in between, and the Shulchan Aruch cuts that all away and just gives you the words of Rava. So whatever Rava might mean, that's what the Shulchan Aruch means. But it's unqualified, and really sounds like it certainly to be taken literally. And the Ramah, of course, comes in with his modified, I would say, interpretation from the Maharil. Yesh omrim, de'ein sarach lishtaker kol kach. A person shouldn't get that chicker. Ella yishter yosem limudo, he should drink a little bit more than usual. The yishan, then he can go to sleep. Umitok sheyashen, einu yodeh bin aroham lebaruch Mordechai. That's the Maharil. Interestingly, there are certain Ashkenazim who do not rely on the leniency of the Ramah in this matter, but strive to adhere to the strict letter of the law as expressed by the Shulchan Aruch, apparently. What's interesting, though, as well, is that what the Ramah describes is very similar to the words of the Rambam. The Rambam, as we said, he doesn't quote Rava's words, he formulated in his words, and he says, in Hilchos Megillah, Perek Beis, Halacha Tezvav, as he describes the Su'udah, V'shose Yayin, person drinks wine, Ad She Yishtaker, okay, until he becomes intoxicated, v'yiradeim b'shichroso, and he falls asleep in his intoxication. Now that sounds very similar to the Ramah, although there are those who argue that it is actually not what the Ramah is saying at all, in the sense that the Ramah says that a person should drink until he's a little bit dozy and go to sleep. The Rambam did not say to go to sleep. The Rambam spoke about a person who more or less passes out. Ad sheyishtaker v'nir dam, until he just loses consciousness, b'shuchruso, and that again seems to be somewhat more than what the Ramah is saying. But in any case, these are the spread of opinions in terms of degrees. But now the question is, does it make a difference how a person becomes inebriated? After all, shall we count the ways? And here, there's a very interesting shaila. Rava did not specify. Rava said, Chayev inish libesume. Libesume means to become inebriated. There's many ways that can happen. Rashi, however, when he translated the word libesume, added another word. And Rashi explains on the word libesume, lihishtaker biyayin, to become inebriated through wine. And interestingly, the Rambam as well, that we quoted just a moment ago, also made a point of saying, Vishose Yayin ad sheishtaker, etc., etc. And therefore, what seems to be an explicit in both of these sources is Yayin, and implicit perhaps is an insistence that it specifically happened through wine and not through other things. And should we ask the question, well, you know, why would that be? The answer may well be based on the Abu Dharam that we mentioned before. According to Abu Dharam, the idea of Chayv Inish Lebesume Yemei Mishte is a zeicher to the Mishte of the Megillah, and all of the drinking feasts in Megillas Esther were Mishte Yayin. Therefore, when we fulfill the mitzvah, zeicher to that, so there is an insistence on wine, and there are those who are of that opinion. Others are more liberal, and as we said, the Shulchan Aruch did not specify, but this is certainly the understanding that there would be an insistence on wine specifically. Another point, which is a very very germane point, is when exactly during the day does this obligation devolve? From the beginning? Well, clearly, I mean, there's certain things a person has to do before they start. They have to daven and hear the Megillah. But once that's true, once that is done, and again, Rava, who is the source of this halacha, did not specify. Chayev inish libesume bepuria. Purim means Purim, and Purim is a day long. But it's worth noting, and it could make a very big difference as to how Purim looks, when the Rambam describes his halacha, as we mentioned, he describes it as part of his depiction of the Seuda. That's how he begins. Perek Beis Halacha Tesvav. Ketzad Chova Seuda Zo. After all, there is a mitzvah of Seuda. It's one of the four mitzvahs of the day. What does the Seuda look like? So Rambam says he should have meat, and he should have all sorts of nice things. And within the context of that discussion, he says, Vishose Yayin Achi Ishtaker, etc. It sounds that very clearly that according to the Rambam, the mitzvah of Lebesume Bepuria exists within the context of Seudas Purim. It's not part of the day of Purim, it's part of Seudas Purim. And once again, we can well understand, according to the Abu Dharam, that if it's Zecher LeMishte, so as surely as Mishte is a Seuda that is centered around drinking, so too, that's how a person's Seuda should be. But outside of the Seuda, when no Seuda is going on, and it's merely drinking per se, it sounds, according to the Rambam, that is not actually part of the mitzvah of Levisume. Once again, others differ and do not restrict it to the Seuda, but these are the pertinent questions that relate to the how to fulfill the mitzvah of Levisume. I must say, I was taken aback by a fascinating question in this regard of Chai Vinish Lebesume Bepuria that was raised by one of the greatest Talmudic minds of the 1800s, namely Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who is famous for having set up the Muslim movement in Europe, was also known as one of the most brilliant Talmudic geniuses of his time. In fact, his first station where he looked to establish the idea of learning Musar regularly was Vilna. He moved to Vilna, which is, of course, the lion's den of Talmudic prowess. And what he sought to establish was, as he was giving these brilliant Gemara Shiurim to the brightest of Vilna, so that there should be no misunderstanding that he's promoting learning of Musar and ethics because he's not capable of learning Gemara, which is what real Torah scholars do. But on the contrary, he was one of the outstanding Gedolim of his time, and he felt very strongly that there should be a heavy emphasis on Musar. And there's a fascinating, it really is, it's a Lomdasha question with regards to Libesumi Bepuria. And this is how it goes. And there could be ramifications. The words of Rava are, Chayev Inish Libesumi Bepuria, Adilo Yada bin Arham Labaruch Mordechai. So a person needs to be drinking and getting more and more Medusam, intoxicated, until he doesn't know the difference between Arham and Baruch Mordechai, whatever that means. So the question of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was as follows. What happens when he reaches that point of he doesn't know the difference anymore? What's happened? In other words, there's a mitzvah Levesumi Bepuria until that point. What changes at that point? Could it be, and I believe this is the way that we are inclined to understand, could it be that at that point he's fulfilled the mitzvah? And that's that. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was inclined to say otherwise. He was inclined to say that actually the mitzvah of Levesume Bepuria accompanies the entire day, or perhaps we would modify and say the entire Seuda, which can sometimes take the entire day. When it says that he's chayev, until he doesn't know the difference between Arham and Baruch Mordechai, that means that if he reaches the point that he can't tell the difference between Arham and Baruch Mordechai, so then he's exempt from the mitzvah, like anyone who's intoxicated is exempt from the relevant mitzvah. And therefore, not knowing between Arham and Baruch Mordechai is the zone of exemption. It's not the point of fulfillment. He's drifted out beyond the reach of the mitzvah. So he's exempt now. It's a very interesting question. It changes the way that we would intone Ad Delo Yada. In other words, he has a mitzvah to continue to be besume indefinitely, unless Lo Yada Ben Arahaman, and then he has no mitzvah anymore. The implications, by the way, of this is that should he recover at some point during the Suda and move back into awareness, so the mitzvah will return. According to the first approach, he fulfilled the mitzvah already. According to the second approach, it is the mitzvah that is unqualified. As long as he's qualified, he becomes disqualified when he doesn't know the difference between Arham and Baruch Mordechai. He can come back into play, and there may still be another few hours left. The mitzvah will come back. And this second approach is also the position of the Sfas Emes, who says an identical thing to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. In his Perush on Maseches Megillah, that everything that a person drinks on Purim is part of the mitzvah. When he reaches the point of the Lo Yada Ben Arham, so then he no longer has the mitzvah. It's not a stage of fulfillment of the mitzvah. It's a stage of exemption from the mitzvah. Prior to that time, he remains obligated. And one of the classic, although again this is a departure from the way we normally understand the mitzvah, but probably one of the primary ramifications will be whether a person should make a point of getting to that zone of Adla Yada bin Arham LeBaruch Mordechai. In other words, if that's the point of fulfillment of the mitzvah, so may we be so bold as to invoke the maxim of Zrizim Makdimim LeMitzvahs. Right? Those who are zealous, they try and fulfill the mitzvah as soon as possible. So a person should try and fulfill the mitzvah by getting to the state of Adlo Yada as quick as they can, and there are very quick means. Whereas if we say that actually, no, Adlo Yada is the point when you're out of the mitzvah, so actually you should probably be looking to be with someone in a much more methodical and balanced and slower pace so that you're involved in the mitzvah more, because adla yada means you're out of the mitzvah, not that you fulfilled the mitzvah. So it's a very different orientation on the pace of the drinking, one would say. So from the world of halacha, as we move to the world of agoda, and when it comes to this halacha, there isn't really that much that divides them. We should know that the Chasam Sofer says something which should change the atmosphere of the Suda. We began with the question, why? Why would there be such it's such an unusual mitzvah. And one thing is for sure, the greatest halachic minds, which discuss every area of halacha from the most severe downwards, have applied the very same halachic analysis to Rava's words of Chayav Inish Lebesumi Bepuria. No one took it lightly. The very same Rambam who paskens halachas in capital cases in Hilchos Shabbos is paskens halacha here, and so do all the others. It's in the Gemara. It needs to be reckoned with. And still, we ask the question, Maro'u al-Kocha? And the Chasam Sofer says, the Jewish people got into trouble via Mishta Yayin. That was the original or a primary indictment of the Jewish people. Al shenehenu misu'udas achashverosh. Now, okay, it could be that the food was kosher, however, but the whole thing wasn't kosher. And they began to get themselves into trouble through Mishta Yayin. That was the source of the problem. The immediate resolution was to fast, which is the extreme undoing of Mishta. But for posterity, for all generations, the way we celebrate the victory is by Mishta Yayin. But the point is, and I think this is a fascinating introduction to Sudas Purim, the Mishta Yayin of a Jewish home is a tikkun for the Mishta Yayin of Achashverosh. It's coming to rectify. But that already, I think, does set a tone for the Sudas Purim. It should be the type of Suda that has everything right about it in order to, through Mishta, undo everything that was wrong about Sudas Achashverosh. And this brings us to a primary statement with regards to Adlo Yada, which is made by the Maharal. The Maharal in his Perush Or Chodosh to Megillas Esther talks about Adlo Yada. And we need to understand, for someone like the Maharal, the notion of a person losing their das, losing their seichel, is just one step lower than a person losing their life. Because das is what a person is all about. So it certainly needs to be understood. And these are his words. Adlo yada. Kilomar. It means. Kikasha adam magia lamida zos. When a person reaches this degree, this level of adlo yada, whatever lo yada, ein lo shum ezer klal. That's exactly the point, says Maharal. A person with no das is helpless. Kilo yeda davar. He doesn't know anything. Ve'ein lo yecholes, and he has no ability. Ve'kach Yisrael ba'osa sha'a. That is the beginning of our appreciation of the state of the Jewish people at that time. They were helpless. Lo haya ha'ezer v'ha'teshua davar ma mitzad atzma. In other words, we need to appreciate that the Jewish people at the time of Purim, they were unable to help themselves. Rak min Hashem Yisbarach Haisa HaYeshua HaZos. Salvation came from HaKadosh Baruch. In other words, what's probably one of the most important underlying themes of Megillas Esther, which makes it timeless, it makes it relevant to every time, is the answer to this question: how did the Jewish people get ahead? How did the Jewish people succeed? How did the Jewish people look after themselves? Now, the world as we know it has an answer to that question. And that answer is not the answer for the Jewish people. Not that they have no part of it, but it is not the be-all and end-all for the Jewish people. In other words, the miracle of Purim more or less happened when the Jewish people realized that there was nothing they could do to improve their situation other than to daven. And the Rambam actually, just before he begins the Mishneh Torah, he lists the Tired Mitzvahs and then lists the seven Drabanon Mitzvahs, and he finishes with Purim and says that even though Purim is Drabanon, which seems to be quite distinct from the Torah, it is actually an amplification of a concept in the Chumash. And that is a concept that Moshe Rabbeinu says, there is no other nation that has HaKadosh Baruch who listens to them, Kashem Elokeinu Bechol Kareinu Eilav. The power of Tefillah and the avenue of Tefillah is what the entire story of Purim is about. And this gives us a deeper understanding as to what exactly was wrong with the Jewish people attending Achashverosh's Seudah. Was it a kashrus issue? Was it a non-Jewish atmosphere issue? In a sense, by the Jewish people attending Achashverosh's Seudah, where they knew it wasn't for them, they shouldn't be there. But why are they going? The halacha says you shouldn't go there. But political get-ahead sense says you should go. And in a sense, what won out at the time is the Jewish people, to a degree, need to take their destiny into their own hands. And even though it's not really a good place for the Jewish people to be, but this is where Achashverosh is now establishing himself as king, and those who attend the feast will ingratiate themselves with him and endear themselves to him, and that's how we'll get ahead. So ultimately, the participation in the Seudah was, without belittling, was not about kosher or not kosher food. It's about a kosher or not kosher approach to where the Jewish people will succeed. Where lies the secret of their success? Where lies the key to their success? The Jewish people abandoned to a certain degree their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the key to success, and preferred a connection with Achashverosh as their key to success. He is the powers that be. And in a sense, having distanced themselves, so to speak, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they got themselves into a lot of trouble. And what had to dawn upon the Jewish people is that, as counterintuitive as it may seem on the surface, nothing will allow for the success of the Jewish people more than their unswerving connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We say, Ein Mazel Yisrael. Mazel doesn't recognize Yisrael. So the ways of fortune of the nations of the world, the truth is, nowadays, looking back, it's not that hard to relate to this idea. We see it every day. Everything that works for everyone else doesn't work for us. The very same things. Any other nation that can do no wrong, we can do no right. And we do exactly the same as them, and more. And the Jewish people had to realize that there is a paradigm shift that has to take place in terms of where is their primary answer to the question of how we will succeed. The Jewish people, without their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do not naturally exist. We've reached a point, as anyone with a sense of history and looks back over the ages, we've reached a point where there is no natural reason why the Jewish people exist anymore. And it may well be that this is the reason that Mordechai, in his way, and Esther, in her way, took such an extreme, agitative approach to the political way to get ahead. Mordechai, he caused trouble. He stuck out and caused problems. Everybody's doing the right thing. Haman is the flavor of the month. Everyone is Korban Mishtachavim. Let's assume there's no Avodah Zorah issues at stake. It's a question of he's the man in charge, so obeisance. And Mordechai says no. And no one can really wonder why. Whatever happened to Derech Eret, whatever happened to Shlomo Shel Malchus, whatever happened to all of these things. And Mordechai says no. And the point is, Mordechai has to take a stand. Mordechai has to counter the overindulgence in the political ways of the Jewish people getting ahead. He needs to take an anti-political stance, an unpopular stance. And so does Esther. And in a sense, this is really part of when Mordechai says to Esther, you need to talk to Achashverosh. And so Esther says, well, if I go now, he could kill me. I haven't been called for a while. It surely is just a matter of days. This is 11 months away. It makes perfect sense to wait and then to do things in the smoother way. And Mordechai responds very harshly. At uves avich tovedu. And she has to go now, which is actually one of the most fascinating questions of the entire Megillah. Why make a point of putting yourself in danger? If it's really not so urgent for a few days, things can go smoothly in the normal run of things. But the point is that Esther, in her way, as Mordechai in his way, they need to undo, they need to oust the cemented belief that the Jewish people won't get ahead unless they do things in the way that are the normal political ways to get ahead. So they need to actually take a counter stance in order ultimately to restore a certain sense of balance to the Jewish people's vision as to how they will succeed. What's very interesting is, from a certain point of view, we see a reverberation here of the original chet, Eitz Hadas, whereby HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to eat from every tree except for the Eitz Hadas. The Nachash, whoever that represents, and who then became part of everybody, in a sense, the tempting of the Nachash is he's saying that you have two ways before you. You can either choose your connection with God, in which case he will chart the way forward for your success, or you could take matters into your own hands and chart your own success, because then you'll know, V'yisen Kelohim, Yodei Tov V'ra, and then you can choose for yourself, make up your mind, and chart your own destiny. And that was the original, was the slightest of Averos, with so many L'shem Shamayim, etc. But the logical progression of the Jewish people choosing to chart their own ways, which is not in accordance with God's wishes, the extreme extension of that are other people who have their own ideas about what should happen to the Jewish people. And some of them are terminal. And that is why the Talmud says, when it's looking for the source in the Torah for various characters, Esther min HaTorah, Mordechai min HaTorah, it asks, Haman min HaTorah minayin? Haman, where does Haman come from the Torah? And the answer, it's a Gemara in Chulin, Daf Kuf Lamed Tes on the base, the answer is, Haman min HaTorah, Hamin ha'etz hazeh, which are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's words of reproach to Mordechai as he ate from the Eitz Hadas. In other words, you ate from the Eitz Hadas, you have your own ideas. It's a matter of time if the Jewish people follow their own ideas as to how they should succeed. Other people get other ideas as to whether or not the Jewish people should be there in the first place. That's also a decision. That's also freedom of choice. And in a sense, the story of and the success of Megillas Esther is the Jewish people, while their lives are in the balance, they have to make a decision. They can't get it wrong. They can't afford to get it wrong. They either follow Mordechai in their connection back to the Eitz HaChaim, essentially, back to the Torah, or they abandon Mordechai, because Mordechai is not a neutral character. He is either the solution or the problem. He is not neutral, and the Jewish people need to choose. And when the Jewish people, their bare essence pushed them to follow Mordechai, and everything worked out well for them, and Mordechai is in a sense the illogical approach to many of their problems. So there were cemented within them, embedded within them, their understanding that the Jewish people will succeed through their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this gives us new insight into why it is that Purim is a time of Kabbalah Satorah, as we said, Kimu v'kiblu, Kimu mashikiblu kfar. As much as the Jewish people had already said yes, there was something about Purim that when they said yes again, and it resounded louder, And the reason is because Kabbalah Satorah, receiving the Torah, it makes a world of difference, as we began to mention last week, as to whether you receive the Torah as a set of obligations or you receive the Torah as the way forward for national success. It's a different type of yes. And it could be that until it became fundamentally part of the Jewish national consciousness, that their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the key to their success, so even the Na'aseh V'Nishma, even the yes of Torah was yes, we accept the obligations, but not yes, we appreciate that this is how we will best succeed. But when they saw it, al besaram, when they saw it through their own life or death experience, they were able finally to say yes, kimu v'kiblu, with an appreciation of Torah, that our way through history does not follow the same course as that of other nations, and trying the same things as them does not always work as well for us as it does for them, and sometimes it only works against us. It doesn't mean to be neglectful of it, but that's not where our trust first and foremost lies. And what's interesting is Amalek, who is our nemesis here, he first meets the Jewish people in a place called Rephidim. And Rephidim, as the Gemara tells us, is an acronym. Rephidim is Rifyon Yadayim. Weakly. That means that the Jewish people, their hands were weak in Torah. Rafu Yudehim min HaTorah. Now what does it mean? They have yet to receive, in a sense, the Torah, right? It's before Matan Torah. Rafu Yudehim min HaTorah. One can explain that the extent to which a person does not yet appreciate that the fulfillment of the Torah connects us with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is the secret of our success. If we don't appreciate that, so then our acceptance of the Torah, it may be affirmative, but it's weak. It's not wholehearted, or not whole-handed. Rafa Yudeim, it's not with both hands holding tight, for this is what will take us forward. But rather, we're not going to drop it, but we have a light grasp on the Torah. Rafa Yudeim, it is the product of a mindset whereby we're prepared to do the obligations and at the same time pursue other options as to how the Jewish people will best succeed. That is the entry of Amalek, because if the Jewish people forfeit their connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the key to their success, so Amalek, who recognizes no such connection, Ashekarcha Baderach, and he is the ultimate expression of every man is in it for themselves. So then one of the first items on their agenda is to wipe out the Jewish people. That's also a choice. And therefore the place that Amalek attacks the Jewish people is Rephidim. And what's interesting is the war that with Amalek went well as long as Moshe's hands were raised. Kasher yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael, v'chasher yaniach yado v'gavar Yisrael. So it's about where Moshe's hands, are they raised up higher, or are they lower? And the Mefarshim explain, when a person's hands are raised up higher than their head, what that means is that they are prepared to accept things in excess of what they understand. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, that is the beginnings of Na'aseh V'Nishma. If your hands are lower than your head, what you're saying is, I'll never do more than they understand. So ultimately, I remain the final arbiter, and I keep my options open. And then the Jewish people suffer from Amalek. They defeat Amalek when Moshe's hands are higher than his head, and the Jewish people respond to that. They understand, fundamentally, our success comes from our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is a fascinating approach to this entire enterprise, which is called Adelo Yada. The person fulfills the mitzvah on Purim, Adelo Yada, Ben Arahaman, Baruch Mordechai, whatever that means, one thing's for sure. By the time he's finished, there isn't that much he can do to help himself. And that is exactly, it is an experience that should last him for the whole year, because that is how the Jewish people are the whole time. It's the closest we can get to approximating it. But it's a lesson for the whole year. And that's why, in a sense, Chuasa Ma'isol HaNetzach, the Teshua was an eternal Teshua, because in Purim we receive the keys. If we only use them, V'tikvasa M'chol Devador, that's the hope that every generation will get the message. And sometimes we have to learn the hard way. And we try and it doesn't work out. We go to Achashverosh Suda, wherever it may be. There's many Achashverishes and there's many Sudas. And not all of them have food. But there are all these get-togethers, and we try and play our part. And not that we shouldn't play a part, But if we see the key to our success is Achashverosh's Suda, as opposed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Suda, then that means we have yet to learn something from Purim, and hopefully it's a lesson we should learn. Bekarov. I wish you all a Freilich HaPurim. See you next week.